This is CliffCentral.com. Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader on CliffCentral.com.
Right, folks, good morning. Welcome to Auto Central, brought to you by Auto Trader, your trusted motoring marketplace. Well, what a fantastic weekend. If you are not in the know, you missed an absolutely cracking event. Full studio this morning. Fazana here, as usual. How are you, Faz?
Good, thanks, and you, Jack?
Good, thanks. Lawrence, how are you doing?
What's up?
Constantine, how are you?
Hangover.
I'm sure. And not from drinking, but just from the amount of work that I think you guys have put in over the last couple of days. And then, obviously, George is in studio. George,
how's it?
How are you doing?
Good, and you?
Yeah. Oh, fine, thank you. Fine, thanks. Well, we'll get on to Festival of Motoring a little bit later. But I think what we'll do is kick off and just have a look at, you know, what's going down in the world of motoring from a South African point of view. And as per usual, let's kick Monday off with some crap news. Is that the petrol price looks like it's going to go up again.
And we thanks, Turkey.
And we're getting to, well, there's not too, well, I know that it's just based on, obviously, the Rand not performing like it should be doing. But it looks like we do another petrol increase between 23 and 25 cents a litre, and this will be the first time that the inland fuel price will go above the 16 rand a litre mark, which isn't good for any of us. It really is shocking, and it's having an impact. There was between June last year and July this year, the number of Lightstone have been running they've been doing a study looking at the amount of people that are visiting shopping centres, so the cars that are going through the booms, and people going to visit garages. And if you look at the year-on-year trend, on average,
people just aren't driving.
Yeah, exactly.
And
people
I'm
have
one
stopped going to the shops, and people aren't going to the garages as often as possible because
the family tradition of the Sunday drive.
Yeah, well, that's
you don't just drive anywhere for the sake of driving. You have to have a very good reason to drive somewhere now because it's just too expensive.
Well, it's become a bit of a luxury, hasn't it? Because you actually got to take that into account. So, that's not good, but I just thought I'd update you. And then, I don't know if you know, but obviously sinkholes in South Africa can have a devastating effect on all the roads. I don't know if you've seen, but Centurion is littered with sinkholes. And with the rainy season approaching, I just thought it would be something to flag. So if you are driving out there, just be aware.
I remember a few years back when I lived in Pretoria, there was a whole section of the N1
that
disappeared into the ground.
Yeah, so more than 30 sinkholes have appeared in Centurion in the last year. Centurion and large parts of Gauteng are underlaid by dolomite rock that becomes water-soluble over time. And obviously, we haven't noticed this because it all happens under the ground, but there are massive holes that are starting to appear in the roads in Centurion, which is not good for
Earthquakes in Boksburg.
But yeah, that's not good because, you think about the amount of cash that has to go in fixing these things.
You need to fill the hole.
Well, you fill the hole and then re-tar all the roads, don't we? Yeah. And then Shaman, there was a gentleman who was a South African driver who was forced to watch helplessly as his Land Rover Discovery caught on fire in Mpumalanga. The guy was driving home. He was towing a caravan. He said he lost a bit of power in the vehicle, and he saw some smoke, so he pulled over, and the next thing, cheers.
Did his caravan burn as well?
No, his caravan, from the video that I watched, looked absolutely perfect.
I saw that video. Jeez, that car was...
It was proper on
properly
fire.
Properly on fire, the caravan a couple of meters back.
So what do you think? I mean, what would cause something like that to you?
Well, if it lost power, that could be something to do with the fuel system. Turbo, maybe the turbo went, and then it cracked the manifold, broke the head. You leak oil and fuel onto a hot exhaust.
And away you go. Smoke and flames. And I mean...
And with the sound deadening in cars these days, that stuff catches fire.
Yeah.
Cougar 2.0.
Did you guys see the video on Facebook about that mark on fire?
No.
And it was under... Like in the center of the car. And then they put the fire out with sand, and then they started the fire again.
Oh, geez, I didn't see that.
Yeah, it was weird. I was like...
Yeah, also in South Africa, or was it overseas?
No, it was here. I can't remember where. But it was like, it must be for insurance fraud or something.
Jesus. Bells. Yeah, no, you don't want to have cars catching on fire. And just, yeah, not a nice thing to have to, sit and watch, your beloved...
I wonder what the insurance has to say about that. Well, your car... Well, whose fault is it?
Well, I don't think you can
fire investigator and then they pay your car off.
Yeah. So anyway, five of the most expensive cars and who owns them. I thought this was really, really interesting, and I was actually surprised. So there's a Ferrari Enzo valued at $670,000 that's owned by Nicolas Cage. That number didn't seem too high to me. Surely there's, I mean, we'll get to the most expensive car, but $670,000 US. I mean, that's pretty pricey. Does that sound like a stock standard price for a car like that?
It might be first edition, the very first one that rolled off the assembly line.
Could be.
Don't know.
Jerry Seinfeld owns a Porsche 959 valued at $700,000. He's not allowed to drive it in the States. I don't know what the reason is. Obviously, laws or regulations as to what you can't drive.
The amount of cars that guy has is insane.
Well, apparently, he owns he's got the biggest Porsche collection in the world, which is, I mean, he obviously loves Porsches. Then Simon Cowell owns a $1.7 million Bugatti Veyron. I've never heard of this guy, rapper Birdman. I don't know. Maybe I'm out of the loop. I don't know my rappers that well nowadays. But anyway, he's also got a Bugatti Veyron valued at $2 million. And then there's a Maybach. What's it? Xlero. How do you say that? E-X-E-L-E-R-O. Anyway, valued at $8 million. And that's owned by Jay-Z. And this
it's probably encrusted with gold and diamonds.
Well, it looks absolutely spectacular. But I just thought that was really, really... really interesting.
This sounds more like a list of the most expensive or one-off cars owned by celebrities.
Probably. Anyway.
Not the most expensive sports cars.
One day when we're big. And then I thought this was really, really cool. But Lego have built an incredible full-size Bugatti that you can totally drive. So they've obviously the Technic Lego, and they've built a full-sized Bugatti that actually drives. And it was just, so they've used more than 1 million Lego elements in total, 339 types of Lego Technic elements used. No glue was used in this assembly, and the total weight of this Lego car is 1,500 kilograms. The engine contains 2,304 Lego power function motors. It's got 4,032 Technic gear wheels and 2,016 cross axles.
But will it do 300 kilometers an hour?
Well, here's the theatrical performance, right? It produces 3.8 kilowatts of power, and its estimated torque is 92 newton meters. Wow. So I think its top speed was something like 20 k's an hour. And they got the guy that actually was the test driver for Bugatti when they were building the Veyron to actually test drive this. But I mean, it's spectacular that they've actually the entire car, the steering wheel, everything is made out of Lego blocks.
Some
which
people
is just
have got too much time on their hands.
Yeah, time and money, because I'm assuming that would have cost. It's probably a great marketing stunt, but I thought that was really, really cool. Right, let's get into some more news here. And I mean, we were chatting a little bit off air, but for those of us that managed to get home to catch it, George, how was the Grand Prix this weekend?
Crap.
That's a simple, straightforward answer. Would you like to elaborate for us a bit?
It's never a good idea to have one person run away with the championship, and that's what's happening. It's disappointing, and you know, it's all Ferrari's fault. It's, you know, they've got the fastest car. They're deploying really rubbish strategies.
Okay.
And and Vettel, he didn't think on the track. I'd rather have let Hamilton pass and be third for the first couple of laps than bump into the side of him.
Yeah.
That was a dumb move. Ferrari's strategy around allowing Raikkonen to be on pole was a dumb move.
Apparently he set a world record, fastest lap
ever.
Yeah,
that's irrelevant. It's irrelevant to the strategy of Ferrari winning the championship and Vettel winning the championship, because there's no way with eight races to go, I think, that Raikkonen could even be a contender.
Yes.
All that's happening is Raikkonen's taking points away from Vettel.
Absolutely.
You know, that's how you have to think about it. You can't think about it any other way. You can't think about it in an emotional way and, oh, shame, you know, Raikkonen deserves to win. It's not about that.
So this is where you actually got to put the team first.
Yes.
Okay.
You've got to put the team and the leader in the championship first.
Yeah.
They're not doing it.
Yeah.
They should not have allowed Raikkonen to slipstream Vettel on that qualifying lap on Saturday. Because of that slipstream, he got onto pole.
Yeah.
They should have had it the other way around.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not as smart as those guys, but when they came out of the pits And I saw Raikkonen behind Vettel, and I saw him halfway around the track so close to Vettel.
Mm.
I thought to myself, you're going to slipstream onto pole.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what happened.
Did. Yeah.
So he did a cracking lap, and the only reason that world record was broken was because of the slipstream.
Yeah. Lawrence, your take?
I'm split into two minds. Okay. I like both Ferrari and Mercedes.
Yes.
I felt the whole thing this weekend was just a little bit childish. From the first lap incident with Vettel and Hamilton to the fake out garage strategies. Are we going to do a fake pit? Yeah. To, you know, then Raikkonen losing the race because he couldn't take care of his tires. The whole thing just seemed a little childish.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, what George said was the reason why the season has been as interesting as it is because the title race has been neck and neck since the beginning of the year.
Correct.
And now we're getting to a point where one guy is starting to pull ahead, and if he wins another race and Vettel fails to score or score decently again, that's it. People will stop watching because...
Yeah, I suppose it's a one-horse race. It becomes a one-horse race. So they really did themselves no favors.
They have done themselves no favors by what they've done. I'm an avid Ferrari supporter.
Correct.
So whoever the driver is that is leading the championship for Ferrari, that's the driver I support.
Yes.
So I'm not a Formula One person supporter.
Yes.
You know, you get a lot of which is fine.
No, you support the team.
I support the team, and then I support the person that has the lead in points.
Okay.
So I'm supporting Vettel.
Yeah.
But he's making dumb decisions.
Mm.
Crashing into the back of Hamilton, or should I say, crashing into the side of Hamilton because Hamilton brake tested him. Now crashing into the side of Hamilton because, you know, the tire is too narrow and I'm just not going to let you through, even if I have to put my car in harm's way.
Yeah.
It's like stupid decisions.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like it.
I'd like to take the field back just a little bit. Yeah. What was your take on the Verstappen-Bottas incident? Who was in the wrong? I was objective. I looked at it from all the angles, and I'm sorry, but Verstappen deserved it. He got what he moved over, and then he just did that little twitch out, and he did that to himself. I'm sorry. And people can cry and say, oh, but he's got a couple of years still to go.
I think any incident involving Verstappen, any incident involving Verstappen, I would err on the side of Verstappen's wrong. And the reason I would err on the side of Verstappen's wrong is because of his immaturity still.
I actually only found out yesterday that he was the youngest Formula One driver to get a seat. 16 years old.
Jeez luck.
I don't even think he's 22 yet. 23, thereabouts.
He's still got a lot to learn.
The disappointing thing is Vettel in some instances starts to act like Verstappen.
Yeah.
And he's much more mature, 4-time world champion. He shouldn't be doing what he did yesterday.
Yeah. Well, he is hoping that Singapore's better.
Yeah.
That is Red Bull's stomping ground. So let's see if they can actually keep a car together for once.
And that's in 2 weeks' time, the 16th.
Yeah.
And
but you know what? Good on Hamilton. Sorry, Ty.
Yeah.
Good on Hamilton. I'm not a Hamilton supporter. And, you know, and what was disappointing yesterday as well is how the crowd booed him. I thought that was that was crappy. He shouldn't have got booed. In any circumstances, it shouldn't happen.
Just poor sportsmanship.
Exactly. But you know what the one thing about that guy is he's consistently focused. Consistently.
Yeah, he arrives to win. I mean, he's there and he's doing his job. You know, whether you like him or hate him,
he's consistently focused. He's in a slower car and he won that Grand Prix.
Yeah, so he obviously just wants it more, maybe. Sure. Well, it sounds really, really exciting. Just in terms of driver standings, Lewis Hamilton with 256 points, Sebastian Vettel on 226, and then Kimi Raikkonen on 164. And then in terms of team standings, Mercedes-Benz out in front with 415, Ferrari with 390, and then Red Bull with 248. So it's not all in the bag yet, but it's becoming close. If they carry on, I mean, from what I'm picking up, if they carry on like this,
it's going to be in the bag for Hamilton, I'm afraid.
It's going to be in the bag for Hamilton. It is theirs to lose. Anyway, guys, that kind of takes care of the news and
on to other
F1 yeah, recap. And the reason that Constantine is in studio with us today is the Festival of Motoring has come and gone for 2018. I cannot believe that that we are done. And I must say, the last 3 days have been absolutely phenomenal. The event for me as an individual, someone who has worked at the event, and then obviously I spent yesterday kind of, you know, downtime with some family. I must say, hats off to yourself and your team from Messe Frankfurt. I think you guys put on a fantastic show. Congratulations to the South African public who came out and supported the event.
And boy, did they.
And they did indeed. And I'm hoping maybe you can shed some light on that. But Constantine, yeah, well done. And give us your kind of, your take on the weekend. I mean, you look pretty chilled for somebody who's running the company that had to put this event on. He was actually telling me on Friday that his entire team told him, you must just stay and you can entertain the big guy.
Well, before Constantine carries on, you can't sing your own praises. Someone else has to sing it for you. Yeah. And I'm going to sing Constantine's praises for a second.
Cool.
Hopefully he doesn't not get out the door when I'm done.
Yeah.
I pitched up there on Friday morning. Early, obviously, we had to be there, and pulled into the parking lot, and I parked at the wrong spot because I had a ticket to park closer to the entrance that Constantine had given me.
Yes.
But I didn't know that it was, for that day. So anyway, so I went and I parked at the top spot that I had another parking ticket for. And as I pulled my car onto the sand, I saw this guy in a black shirt or a t-shirt and a cap on. I was like, I know you. Because I hadn't seen Constantine in I think he had a cap on. I hadn't seen him in a cap before. Yeah. So, you know, you're a little bit hidden.
Yeah.
And I got out of the car, and here's the guy that runs the show.
Yeah.
And he's helping direct traffic and help people park.
Fantastic.
I mean, that is proper leadership. So well done. And he was carrying chairs. I saw him carrying chairs upstairs. I saw him moving tables around.
We watched him pull down some curtaining. Yeah. He's not somebody that doesn't like just stands back. Clearly, you get your hands dirty.
He thinks in the proper way.
That's, but Constantine, I think all in all, are you happy? Successful show?
No, we are very happy. So the goal really was that every year we're putting on a bigger show. Mm-hmm. So we started the concept in 2016.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of learnings that we took from 16 into 17, and a lot of learnings into 18, mm-hmm. and overall this show was the biggest show we've ever had. It was all numbers, heads down, pointing into absolutely the right direction.
Fantastic.
And for me, most important also, we also look at, obviously we're following social media, we're looking at what the feedback is out there. Mm. Also, hands down, the best kind of social media response we had about the show.
Okay.
And that's very, very important. Of course, you have always a few people that, you know, that complain.
No,
the major complaint was the amount of traffic getting there. But if you get 7,000, 8,000 cars there, I mean, they have to go somewhere.
No, absolutely. I mean, this is the thing. You know, you guys are putting on a world-class event. People want to come and visit the event. You're naturally going to have traffic at the event. I queued on Saturday morning to get in. But what was encouraging for me, it was like, look how many thousands of people are coming to the show. And that's like, well, you know, then...
It should tell you something.
Exactly. If you're driving in and there's no one there and it's like, oh, cool, I got in quickly, but, you know, then it's crickets, then what's the point?
But it was moving. Most important is that we moved. So we tried really so one of the things we always do from an operational point of view that's always important. I always tell my team, you know, show me the math, show me the numbers. So if someone says, you know, but we can check the cars and the entrance, but it's only going to take 10 seconds. And I say, okay, then take 6,000 times 10 seconds. And then you can imagine how long this takes.
Yeah.
So we're trying to basically remove all bottlenecks as much as possible. So overall, the feedback in social media was very, very positive. And I think we talked about this earlier. I also took my family through on Sunday, and my family had a blast. And my wife, for example, she's not really a petrolhead. Mm-hmm. And she also said it was a fantastic show for her, for the kids. They were talking about it, and we had the same feedback that I heard from other people. And that's what it's all about.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, and if we can continue this discussion, kind of how the show rolled out. Thursday, we had the media day. Lawrence, you guys were on the ground there. You obviously went to a number of reveals or launches. How was it from a from a media point of view, I mean, I know you wore three different caps over the weekend, but from your, let's call Lawrence the media day on Thursday, what did you experience? What brands did you see? What was unveiled? What was the highlight from that point of view?
Pretty much all the manufacturers that were present had something to show us. A lot of the high-end pointy vehicles, let's put it that way,
yeah.
We're only going to be seeing these cars launched officially to the public end of September, end of November, December, into January next year. So, like the Audi Q8, we're only going to see next year, first quarter next year.
Mm-hmm.
New Duster, September. The new Jimny, we'll only see in December. The V6 X-Class will only be December. So, for us, it was nice to be able to get in the
like
metal.
A preview of
what,
yes,
the car is.
Yeah.
You couldn't drive any of these cars.
But it's still nice to look and feel and touch.
But yes, very, very, very nice to be able to see the vehicles before the actual launch. And yeah, a lot of the public also, that was their takeaway. Oh, the new Q8. Wow,
yeah.
That's only coming next year. We saw it, we sat in it, we touched it.
Exactly. I suppose, and obviously that's what your job's there to do, and that's why the OEMs launch, and reveal these kind of vehicles.
It is. It's more, I can't really call them launches. They
sure
are reveals. Because
reveals,
many of the cars, it is the only one in the country.
Yes.
And it's just here to show people what it looks like.
What it looks like, yeah.
It gives us something to look forward to for the actual launch. Like, I'm really looking forward to the new Jimny.
I think a lot of people
are.
I mean, we'll get onto that just now.
We are five journalists at Auto Trader, and we are already
chomping at the bit.
To the point where it's like fist fights about who's going to go on the launch and who's going to get the test car. Because the car just, it has that cool factor.
What do you think we'll chat about the Jimny just now, because I don't want to isolate it. Let's then, so that's from a media day, really, really successful. I mean, and then obviously we move into Friday. Now, Friday was kind of, there were two elements to Friday. One is, if you're in the motor industry, NAMSA hosted, the NAMSA conference was hosted.
If you're in the business side of the industry,
yes.
If you weren't there, you missed out.
Absolutely. So it's the first time I've ever experienced a big auto kind of industry conference, and Constantine, I'm going to put this question to you. Ask what is successful. Was that NAMSA conference successful? Did you guys get what you needed to get out of that?
Yeah. So it was the first time that we actually did the conference ourselves.
Okay.
It was the first one that we put on as an organizer. So there was obviously a bit of pressure. The good news is we had to increase capacity twice.
Yes.
And up to a point, so if you have been there, it was packed.
It was packed.
We had 400 delegates there, all top delegates. And I listened to half of it, but the content, what I was told, was phenomenal. We had some really top speakers.
Yeah, we did.
And it all flowed together very nicely. The highlight that I heard, and I just saw a glimpse, was, of course, you, George, but also, Johan the Nation coming down from New York, talking about how the future is. And I think it was quite an impressive presentation, because it was in a very practical way. So it wasn't just like buzzwords.
It wasn't just
like, we're all going to fly to the moon in a car soon, mm-hmm, and everything is going to be. But he was very tangible in saying, you're going to have that skateboard frame, and you can put things on top. So it was really down to the practicalities of the change of the technology that was going to come.
Well, I mean, I've got a list here. I mean, I sat taking notes, and what was really, really amazing for me, and I mean, there's obviously some stuff that we're going to touch on now, but before I get into the individual speakers, George, you spoke at the conference. I don't know if you've spoken at an AMSA conference before, but in terms of the audience and what was put across as the CEO of one of the biggest automotive brands, or brands that play
the biggest automotive brand
that in our space, how did you find it?
I didn't know what to expect.
Sure.
Number one. Okay. So that was my first thought. Coming to the NAMSA conference, I didn't know what to expect because I'd never been to one.
Mm-hmm.
My first impression was, wow, this should happen, I think, more frequently.
Yeah.
That was my thought after the fact. This should happen more frequently. As far as, how the industry thinks about stuff, I thought The content was really good. Like Constantine said, it wasn't about this airy fairy kind of fly to the moon sort of sort of stuff that everybody thinks, we know all that, go home, don't think about it again. There was actually, in my opinion, there was tangible things that you could take away and think about and potentially, you know, have as future discussion points, almost like our panel discussions at Bikefest, where there are tangible things that you think to yourself, well, I think this should continue as a topic of discussion. It's really important. So my thoughts were the day was really brilliant. I thought the right people were there.
Correct.
You know, all in the same room.
Yeah.
And from my perspective, it looked incredibly successful.
I think so too. Well, let's just have a look. I mean, let's just touch on some of the speakers who spoke, and let's just look at some of the things that were spoken about and how this actually impacts everybody in South Africa. And I think what was really nice is the vision that has been painted for me as a consumer and just as a human who drives on the roads, you know, in South Africa. The future really, really looks bright. And I think the importance of the motor industry for South Africa from an economic point of view is absolutely fantastic. So I mean, if we look at the Director General of the Department of Trade and Industry, Lionel October, he was up and he obviously gave the opening kind of keynote, and he spoke about driving vehicle volumes in South Africa, which is, I'm sure, is music to every single OEM's ears. You know, we currently have about 600,000 cars on the road, and the objective is to get that's production a year, and the objective is to try and get to over a million. That's
not selling to locally.
Yeah,
that is to export.
Yes,
and because that's where the money is.
Correct.
You're selling vehicles into the north of Africa, so our northern borders and above.
Yes,
all the way up to like Egypt.
Yeah,
kind of.
Yeah, I mean, there's north of 10 million cars on our road or vehicles on our road
sorry,
now.
Yeah,
but. I think the objective of a million is a good one.
Yeah.
You know, and I didn't hear this spoken about in the keynotes, but you know, it's probably an underlying thing anyway. Is the government's, and we did speak about it in the tech talks.
Yes.
Though, the government's drive or or policies around age of vehicle.
Yeah.
And emissions taxes.
Yes.
I think are two big topics that need to be driven in order to achieve that million vehicle.
Absolutely. I mean, he went on to speak about the motor industry as the backbone of the South African economy, and a lot was spoken about industrialization and transformation. And I think from an industrialization point of view, you know, and we'll get into some of the other speakers now, but the size of the pie that we could own, I mean, South Africa, in terms of Africa, is the number one kind of vehicle.
Well, he spoke about the gateway.
We are the gateway. Mm. But hot on our heels is obviously Morocco, which is something that I would never have thought, ever. You know, so there really is, you know, a lot of good stuff happening in the industry. And obviously from a transformation point of view, I mean,
remember what he said.
Yes.
That Morocco might as well be in France.
Correct.
Or shall I say, France's manufacturing.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay.
It's their Mexico.
Yes.
Where South Africa comes from a very different perspective.
Yeah.
We, our industrialization or manufacturing plants are not a port for somebody.
Yes.
So that, I think, is Morocco's Achilles heel.
Yeah.
Is that they might as well be in France.
France. So they're producing cars on behalf of...
Yes,
the French. Whereas we're doing it, you know, in South Africa,
we're doing it legit. Yeah, you know,
exactly. So I mean, and then they went on to talk. I mean, we're not going to get into transformation now because we know that that's a hot topic. It doesn't matter where you're playing sport, or you're in the motor industry. It doesn't matter what business you is, but it's something that is going to happen. And you and I spoke about the future of motoring because I think you spoke a lot about that over the weekend. And if we have a look at where electric vehicles are going and where the motor industry is going from a electric vehicle point of view. For me, this is where we should be putting a lot of focus because this is the next wave. Mm. I mean, in 20 to 30 years, electric vehicles will be, you know,
the thing.
Yeah.
You know, so it's the upstream and downstream.
Downstream. I'm
that stuff
in my notes.
That actually got to me because what you were just talking about now is actually we are not going to be worried so much about foundries and engine blocks and steel and that type of stuff, as we will be worried about where we're going to get copper from for the motors.
Yes.
And whatever material it is that we choose to make batteries out of.
Mm.
But those are going to become the new upstream and downstream sources that will drive the large parts of the industry.
Well, I mean, I think what was interesting there as well, you know, and this it's and this is the positive part of having a festival of motoring like this, is these topics continue to be spoken about.
Yes.
And in terms of upstream and downstream, is it no longer matters whether your ground has gold, copper, metal in it.
It's not what's in the ground. It's not what's working it.
Exactly.
Correct. Yeah. So just because you've got copper in the ground doesn't mean you should become the largest manufacturer of batteries in the world, right?
Exactly. So those are not competitive advantages
for countries
anymore.
So stick to your knitting. You know, we're good at manufacturing cars. Let's continue to manufacture cars and let's become the best at manufacturing cars.
And you know, somebody mentioned it in one of the keynotes that South Africa's run out of gold. We can't dig any more gold out of the ground.
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't matter. Because of this principle.
Correct. We can get gold elsewhere.
Yeah, we can. If we need gold or we need steel, we can just, go and fetch it.
Well, I think this is touching to what Jeffrey Dinham from Econometrics was talking about, just in terms of the impact that the motor industry has, on South Africa.
PE wouldn't exist.
Well, PE wouldn't exist. And if we just have a look at the knock-on effects of that, I mean, if we lost the
VW plant, just the VW plant in PE.
I mean,
the manufacturing plants.
Yeah, exactly. 8% of GDP comes out of the automotive industry. That would be a huge knock for our economy. For every single job that is created in the motor industry, there's 8.4 additional downstream jobs that are created from that, and that is absolutely massive.
It's mind blowing.
It is mind blowing, and it's really, for me, it's just positive, because it means, you know, we sit and we listen to news and we see the stuff that we see on social media and all this nonsense, but when you sit and you listen to the big guys talking about what is actually happening behind the scenes,
and that's the thing, is that whole conference was the big guys.
It was
all the CEOs, all the MDs, all the government departments. Yeah, it's a room full of guys in suits, but exactly. What they were talking about is the stuff that really matters to the business side of it.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know that we export product to over 154 international markets.
But that's, so what I got out of one of those keynotes is that's a problem.
Too many.
We need to really, so when Steve Jobs rejoined Apple, the first thing he did was he says, let's focus on these couple of things. Let's cut out all that stuff.
Yeah.
So as a country, we should focus on this industrialization and not just sell everything to everybody's auntie.
Correct. Well, I mean, that's what he was saying.
Yeah.
So if you and then obviously looking at those free trade agreements between other African countries, like in Egypt. So, I mean, what he was, and this is the simplicity of what he was saying to me, is that somebody manufacturing, let's say, the Ford Ranger, go to Egypt and say, right, you guys manufacture the Ford Ranger for the entire African continent, okay? And then you'll do one or two other, smaller variants. We, on the other hand, will manufacture the Polo or the Everest, whatever, for the entire African continent and create long production runs. I think that was something that came through strong, for me, is that we need to get these long production runs in the go, because that will then create that proper backbone to continue, what we have, which is really, really interesting. I mean, 8% fall in GDP, if we lost that, 588,000 jobs would be lost in this country, which would mean 8.4 billion rand would leave our economy. There would be a drop in of 37.4 billion in taxes that SARS would obviously take in. And then the trade deficit would go up by 75 billion. So, I mean, it's imperative that I'm just happy that I work in the motor industry. I really, really am. I think it's flipping brilliant. And I'm excited about it, because there is a future. Then Andrew Kirby from Toyota. What a phenomenal, phenomenal presentation. And just somebody that I kind of feel like, he's the head of Toyota. He's also the president of NAMSA. And he just gave a really nice keynote.
There's a reason for that.
Absolutely, and he spoke about this kind of this master plan that has been put into place to transform the industry by 2021 and by 2035 to have free trade agreements across the African continent. And when you see and you hear the types of people that are running the industry, we're in safe hands. And that was to every single speaker that was up there. You know, who else? I mean, Alec Irwin, I mean, he got up. We spoke about retail trends, you know, smart stores, hyper-personalization in the motor industry, integrated assistance, you know, and remote kind of exports. There was so much spoken about. I mean, you know, the lists and lists go on, but it really, really was phenomenal.
It was, for me, it was, guys, this is the reality. This is where we are. Then it was, this is where we're hoping to be. And then there's, well, this is how it could be. And that's where the digitization and digitalization came into the...
Yeah, I think... sorry. I think, you know, when it came to the master plan, as you put it,
yeah.
The thing that struck me about the master plan and the free trade agreements... Mm. Was that there's positives and negatives to free trade agreements.
Yeah.
You know, the negatives are if you're going to impose import duties, mm-hmm. guess what's going to happen? Someone's going to do it to you.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a trade war.
Donald Trump becomes a trade war.
Yeah.
So is that an antiquated way of thinking? And I don't think the world has an answer to that yet.
Yeah.
Because free trade is not, you know, free trade creates this dumping ground, as they put
well,
it.
Well, that's what I was going to get to now.
You know, you start to realize how the countries have to grapple with these issues.
Yeah.
It's not just about free trade, and it's not just about imports. It's about putting policies in place that not only make it the best thing for the country, but also create an environment where you seem like you're a friendly family member.
Absolutely. So, I mean, there's bigger issues on our planet than, you know, taxis that drive badly. And, you know, we harp on about it, but then all of a sudden you get exposed to the whole pie, and it's like, hang on a sec here, maybe, you know, let's not focus on that so much.
The
let's
stuff
keep
that
our
we're
eyes
worried
on this.
About is
I mean, I didn't know.
It's trivial.
Mean, we spoke about Africa being a dumping ground for you know, countries like America. I mean, and that example that was given with regards to Nigeria. Nigeria's got 200 million people in it, which is pretty much four times bigger than the number of people we have in South Africa. And they only sell 6,000 new cars there a year. Mm. It is mind-boggling that, you know, a country that is that big are buying second-hand cars because, and I don't know how it works, do the Americans go, well, listen, we can't really sell this here, so let's just dump it in Africa.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it's the immaturity of the kind of government and all that stuff that exists in you know, in Africa,
yeah.
and their policies and historical policies and stuff that they've put in place.
Yeah. So I mean, he spoke about more proactive states in Africa and us just being a little bit smarter and actually realizing that we can go and fight the big guys. We don't have to, you know, sit back and be like, oh, because you're an American, you know, we'll listen to you. Whereas we can actually drive the future of you know.
I'll be honest with you. I don't know if you have ever been out north to Silverton or if you've been to the Stroomendale plants.
I used to work in Silverton at Ford.
The motoring manufacturing plants in South Africa, they are not small and they are not dinky. They are world-class facilities. Mm. They are making cars for the European market and for the American market.
Yeah.
Cars
yeah.
that we will never see.
I mean, carrying on with that free trade discussion, one of the things that I think was very smart and the way in which it was brought across was so free trade is not just about free trade.
Yeah.
It's like we will have a free trade agreement with you, Nigeria, and we will manufacture these three brands.
Yeah.
You manufacture those three brands.
Yeah.
That's what free trade is about.
Yeah.
Free trade is not just about, okay, you can do anything and everything.
Correct.
It's about sharing of the pie where you have a free trade agreement, but you also then have boundaries around that free trade agreement.
Correct.
It's not just all or nothing.
And it's for the benefit of everybody at the end of the day. So it's a win-win for the countries that are partaking in that. All right. Well, I mean, we could carry on. I mean, I just want to touch it. I mean, Johannes Nason, I mean, that guy, wow. I mean, you know, 30 years in the motor industry. He's run some of the biggest OEM brands on the ground here and overseas. I know he's just recently retired. He was the CEO of
Cadillac.
And he just, I mean, his entire keynote was about the biggest changes on its way since the last 100 years in the motor industry and the rise of the mega city and how this, you know, and it's, it's speaking like that, like a mega city. It just sounds really, really phenomenal where the industry is going to go, and that they, you know, this is where we're going. It's not like it's, you know, it's happening. I think we're in it. Mm. The transition is already happening. And I mean, he gave a really, really, awesome keynote. So, but yes, I mean, so that was just NAMSA, but let's get into the nuts and bolts of it. And let's just talk about how you experienced it. Lawrence, you were there on Sunday with your family. I was there on Sunday with my family. You were there over the entire weekend. Yeah. As a consumer, your thoughts, what did you like? Did you see any, what was your best car? I mean, besides the simulator that you hijacked.
Yeah, I hijacked it for a while, but I'd like to have seen more low carb food stands.
Low carb food stands.
Yeah, because everything, like, I battled. I actually bought hot boerewors rolls, and I tossed the bread, and I ate the boerewors. So that was a minute little drop that applies to me personally. But other than that, as a consumer, I thought it was phenomenal.
Yeah.
You know, it's strikingly better than last year,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know how Constantine is going to make it better for next year.
Well, I think, Constantine, I'm going to put that ball straight into your court, because, I mean, you know, I think Constantine's biggest thing is to get the same OEMs back, because if they are doing themselves year on year, then the show only gets better and better. And I mean, you can touch on now, and I'm sure the three of us who were there with our kids, if I have to put the gold, if someone was going to get a gold award this weekend for the best kind of the best OEM brand at the show, 100% hands down VW. They knocked it out the park again, and we'll get into some of the stuff that they did. But I want to, let's see what you have to say.
Well, I can't say that because obviously Omar.
I think the
one thing that we are trying to do with this festival, when we talk to the OEMs, is to say, you know, like in the old Johannesburg International Motor Show, you know, you had your space and everybody did exactly the same thing. Everybody was a showroom. That was it. So what we are saying here is we basically creating a platform for you here, and you decide what you want. You decide what you want to do. And obviously, you know, some of the car manufacturers saying, okay, we want to promote our, high end cars, the tuned cars, looking at, Mercedes does a great job of looking at the AMG and really pushing AMG, or BMW with M and so on and so forth. And other companies obviously say, okay, we want to portray ourselves as the most family friendly, car brand out there. And that's what Volkswagen did. But also other sponsors like Puma Energy basically made a kids world and so on, a kids zone and so on and so forth. So it's very difficult to say who was better than the other one. It's very difficult to say because it's a platform and each car manufacturer basically did something else. I mean, we also talked about earlier about what Suzuki did.
Yeah.
You know, promoting the new Jimny, I thought was quite clever way with this competition of going those three different zones. Volvo portrayed themselves, I think, very nicely as a technology leader. That was their take on this show. So again, it's very difficult to say who did the best. I was impressed with all of them.
Yeah.
Obviously, I've got a 6-year-old and a 2-year-old. They're like the Volkswagen stand. So yeah. I mean, if you've got families, that's basically what they did. I was enjoying it. For me, most importantly, is that families and everyone who goes there has a good time, and we talked about earlier about the value for money you get out of the show.
Absolutely.
And what you might have seen is, like, you know, I'm German, all right? So I think a show needs to be judged also by beer prices.
Yes.
And so I agree. I feel very strong about having, you know, you mustn't pay 60 rand for a pint. We had craft beer there for 30 rand and so on and so forth. So I think let's talk a bit about the value for money you got.
Yeah, so myself, wife, 2 kids.
Mm-hmm.
In total, for an entire day on Sunday, I spent 580 rand. That was the ticket prices for myself and the wife.
Yeah.
Prices for the kids.
Yeah. And spending money.
And food. 580 bucks.
Well, I mean, you didn't have to pay for food if your kids can eat ice cream all day, because all you do is ship them up to the VW stand because they were giving away free ice cream, free candy floss. I mean, they were phenomenal. I'm going to rant about them now. Yeah.
I didn't open my wallet.
Yeah.
Because whichever stand we went to, the kids were given ice creams and chocolates and marshmallows and cool drinks and water. My wife didn't have to worry because I think we came home with like 6 bottles of water. That I don't know where they came from, but they were in the backpack.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, yes, an entire day out with my family cost me $580.
Yeah, which I mean, you know, this day and age.
And
including ticket price, that's what, $120 a head?
Well, it was 200 rand for myself, 200 for the missus, 10 rand for the youngster, and 50 rand for the middle one because they don't pay the full price.
Yeah.
And they got, the whole day was basically about them.
Yeah.
They did the pedal carts at the Puma Energy. They were on the zip line. They even took a spin in the simulator. They, I can't even remember all the stuff they did, but I got dragged pillar to post. And the best part of the day, though, was when we left at like 3-4 o'clock, and I don't even think we were halfway down Allendale, and I turned around and both of them were in the back seat.
Absolutely,
all the sugar gone.
Yeah. Well, I hope you don't mind, but I took the liberty of actually doing some first-hand consumer research for you, and I was sitting at dinner last night, and I was like, you know what, let me hear it from the horse's mouth. So I interviewed my two boys. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to play you a quick clip. I'm not going to play the whole thing, but I just want to, because what I don't think brands understand the impact that they have on kids, children at such a young age. And I got some really, really good stuff out of what my eldest. I mean, I've got a 7-year-old who you can hear who he is. He's also not a car fundy because you'll hear one of his answers. I nearly fell off the chair. And then my eldest, who's 10. But just take a listen to this quickly.
Cereal out.
No, this is for real.
No, this is practice.
I had to tell him this was for real. Okay, no for practice.
Hey guys, it's Tyron here from Auto Central, and I've spent the entire day at the Festival of Motoring, and I must say, well, in fact, I've spent the week there. From Wednesday when we were setting up until tonight, I've been at the festival every single day, and I must say it's been absolutely amazing. And today, I was lucky enough to get to spend the day there with my children, and I thought what I'd do is I'd ask them a couple of questions and get some first-hand feedback of what their experience was. I'm sitting here with Seth, say hello.
Hello.
Tane boy, say hello.
Hello.
That's Seth and Tane, those are my boys. And the first question that I'm going to ask them is, overall, what was your favorite thing about today?
Going on the auto trailer race car.
Yeah.
And the virtual reality.
And the virtual reality.
Or next time go up onto the 4x4.
And after that the 4x4 track.
Yeah.
What was your favorite thing about the 4x4 track?
Going down that big slope.
40-degree.
Yeah.
Big hill.
The 40-degree slope.
40-degree slope. And what did that feel like? What car were you in?
A brand new Polo.
What a chop.
What was it? What's the big bucky called?
Amarok.
You need to learn your cars, okay? Tane, what was your favorite part about the day, bud?
I really enjoyed the simulator for Auto Trader. I also enjoyed the...
Are you just saying that because you know...
No.
Okay.
I also enjoyed the 4x4 track.
Yeah.
I enjoyed all the activities at VW. I really got to compliment VW. They did so well.
Yeah.
They attracted the most attention out of all the cars.
So all the other brands were there? You think VW did the best?
I was at VW. I could see Mercedes with the X-Class.
Yeah.
There was literally about like 10 people there, and then like up 30-35 people at VW.
Okay, and why do you think VW did such a good job? What did they do differently?
Because they had so many activities to keep people entertained.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm gonna list them now, like ice cream.
Yeah.
They had mini cars that you could drive.
Mini electric cars, the little Emotion Amaroks, and they could put babies in there.
Yeah.
So they catered for the whole family.
Anyway, so I mean, you know, the conversation goes on, and what I really took out of that is he spoke about VW had built this wave okay, out of plastic bottles. And they had a surfboard, and they were using that as a backdrop to take photographs. And he just said to me, Dad, you know what? I really got a strong message out of that, that we shouldn't be putting plastic into our oceans. And that for me was like, they obviously achieved something. The message was, it came through loud and clear. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can hear from both of my boys, you know, and we went to everybody. I mean, there wasn't anybody that I could really point fingers at. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, VW, again, being the people's car and the family car, really, really knocked it out the park.
My son's favorite was at the BMW activation. They had like one person in the middle. And then two cars were drifting around them.
Oh,
and
wow.
That were like, his eyes were like as big as like,
saucers, yeah. So he really cool. enjoyed that. And Lawrence, I mean, you did a whole bunch. You told me even 5FM, you know, all you had to do is take a picture and then you could feed your kids sugar all afternoon.
Yeah, so I didn't lead my wife around the show. I poked and prodded every now and again. I sort of just trailed behind the wife and the kids and let them just sort of run and go with it, because I wanted to see where the flow of the people was going to take them. And from the pit building down at Suzuki, where they were given their first task, which was the pamphlet, go to each station, collect a sticker, and you'll get a prize at the end of the day. To the, you know, each of the places that they got test drive cars.
Yeah.
You know, they all got to go for a drive around the track.
And, yeah.
I think it was on the first pit level, right at the top. They had a whole bunch of random activations, but really cool things like Manhattan Suites had a stall there. In order to get in, you had to play hopscotch.
Oh, you see. Yeah.
And, you know, and then the kids go in and they can fritter themselves dick on sugar. Manhattan Suites.
Yeah.
And then when they've had enough of the painting and the playing games there with the hostesses, they can go next door to 5FM, beanbag chairs, play PlayStation in the shade.
Well, that thing for me is the festival caters for everybody. I mean, my father, who knows nothing about cars, like, I'm surprised.
He could go and sit on the beach chairs at West Bank the whole day in the shade, and watch the cars come past.
And that's what we landed up doing in the afternoon. We actually landed up watching all the motorsports. I mean, we haven't even touched on the amount of motorsports. Yes. I mean, her name, I can't think of the lady's name now, but that racing driver had a stroke, and they brought her back, and she did her first lap in a car again after having this incident happened to her. I mean, it really was spectacular. Then, I mean, let's just talk about aeroplanes driving down the home straight, and
Nigel Hopkins.
I mean, George, just elaborate on that. I mean, that was awesome.
Nigel Hopkins' signature move is his signature move is the knife's edge.
Okay.
So that thing that you see him doing down
when
the
pit straight, sideways a bit?
Yeah. Yes. So it's called the knife's edge. That's the aerobatic maneuver. He loves doing that. I've seen him many times because I'm a pilot, so he's at the airfields that I fly to, I thought him, like, coming to do his little aerobatic show was just something phenomenal at a car show.
Absolutely.
Know, as soon as Nigel came across the top of the track, people started pulling out their phones and recording what he was doing.
Exactly.
So I thought that was phenomenal.
Yeah. Well, it's just nice.
And while you guys are talking, obviously, Logan, she's 2 weeks old, and I would love to have had her there. And Kerry wanted to go, and she couldn't because she had to look after our little one. I'm getting excited to kind of take her as soon as she can start. You know,
exactly,
and that's experience the thing, because parents, prams, little kids, toddlers, we are 3-4 years old. One of the things I wanted to say to Constantine was, my wife was so taken with these little kids running around in the Festival of Motoring.
Yeah, the little jumpsuits. Fantastic.
I don't know where they all came from. It was like, she's like, where did these kids go?
Yeah, but they had a retail store in the main pit building, above the pits, actually, that you were selling all the merchandise.
For me, because I want one.
I get you one.
A jumpsuit.
I get you one. We have a few. No, we also at some stage on Sunday morning we also gave a few to have exactly that. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic! No, it was really, really awesome. I mean, I just the more I think about it now, there's so much more that we can touch on all day.
My kids could go on. They were sitting this morning having their hair brushed before school, and they were just like, "I'm going to tell my friends about what I did here, and I was in that car."
And the thing is, you could also just rock up, and I mean, the picnic areas were an absolute hit. I mean, the fact that you guys had cameramen and presenters on the ground interviewing people, you know, I think all in all, Constantine, you guys did an absolutely phenomenal job. And I think for myself, George's, as sponsors of the tech zone. I really think that this festival is
my takeaway.
I'm not saying what I'm saying because we're sponsors.
No, for sure. No, me either.
Even if we weren't.
Yeah.
You know that the stuff you guys put on is something South Africa's never seen. Yeah.
But to sum it all now up, what we talked about the conference.
Correct.
Is basically what we said is like this automotive industry is so important for this country.
Absolutely.
And so therefore the automotive industry has to have an annual event where they're basically showcasing that strength. Mm-hmm. And that's what this automotive industry, I think, achieved here by saying, you know what, we are here, we are here to stay,
yeah.
We are confident about our brands, about this country, and so therefore that's all ties it all together, and that's what it was all about.
Yeah, because it's not just
my takeaway.
Yeah.
My eldest daughter said to me, I can't wait until
next year. Absolutely. Well, I mean,
it's coming from my kids. They're just like, we can't wait to go and do it again.
Yeah, well, I mean, I had the same from my family, you know, and not petrol heads at all, but absolutely thoroughly enjoyed every single second. I mean, I spent the afternoon with a friend of mine who is a petrol head. I mean, the guy was just, you know, like you said last week, you know, if he didn't have ears, it was just, you know, smiles. And you know, it, like, just sit with somebody who really appreciates, like, he could tell you what the car was, what's under the hood, kind of like you guys, and it's and it's just really, really nice to
my next door neighbor was there, and she came across and said she was basically dancing up and down. I drove in the new A class, and I'm like, yeah, okay,
but I mean, you know, and again, I mean, pretty much I would say 95% of the vehicle brands in South Africa were on display this weekend.
Well, some, yeah. Quite a lot. There were some brands missing, mm-hmm. but this platform doesn't need all brands to be there every day. As I said, this is a marketing platform that we basically offer to the car manufacturers. Yeah. And if you have got something to talk about, that's the platform to go for. And that's so.
And if you make an impression, it sticks.
Oh, of course it sticks.
My kids can tell you exactly who Puma Energy is.
Yeah, because they had that little kiddie zone up top there as well, which was really, really awesome. So, Constantine, thank you very much. You know, good to obviously have you in studio again. I think, you know, a successful show. You were saying that numbers compared to last year up in all shapes and forms?
Yes.
Okay.
We will release official numbers in the next 2 days because we're still reconsolidating.
No, sure, absolutely.
But it was significantly up from last year. So it was the biggest show we've ever had. So we now need to. We're already in the planning phase for 2019. We want to do a couple of changes.
Yeah.
Make it even better, bigger.
Bigger and better. And I mean, you know, and that's the case. And I mean, if it gets bigger and better than what it already is, it can only be another spectacular show. So thanks very much for coming into studio today. I think George, just to wrap up quickly. I know last month we missed it by probably 2 days, but last month was obviously Women's Month. And you did a really, really interesting story last week with regards to six vehicle inventions, six car safety features that were pioneered by women. And I think, you know, for the last minute, we can just touch on some of these. So let's just start with number one. Yeah, what have you got it there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So you wouldn't think this, but mechanical turn and brake signals was invented by a silent movie star in the early 1900s, Florence Lawrence.
Not me.
No, definitely not you.
So that's very interesting. But the one that floored me the most,
yes,
was the brake pads.
Brake pads.
Brake pads.
Windshield wipers.
Bertha Benz, and then windscreen wipers. Also invented by a woman, and then Kevlar tires. I mean, you know, it was invented by a scientist, but also, I think it's the simplest things that took me by surprise.
Yeah.
Wireless transmission technology invented by a woman. And that's complicated. And then another simple thing, a car heater.
Which makes complete
which
sense.
Which is the one sense. Thing in a car my wife says is a non-negotiable. Heated and cooled seats. Doesn't matter what we buy, that's what it has to have.
Has to have it. Well, guys, thanks very much for being in studio. George, thank you very much. Have a good week. Constantine, Lawrence, Fazana, thank you very much. And this was Auto Central presented by Auto Trader. And we will catch you guys in a couple of weeks.
This is CliffCentral.com.